This is All of It. I'm Kusha Navadar in for Allison Stewart. Thanks for spending part of your Thursday with us. I'm really glad you're here. On today's show, Mike Post has composed iconic theme songs for shows like Law & Order and Hill Street Blues. He's got a new album out blending bluegrass and blues, and he joins us for a listening party. We'll talk about where to go in our area to get the best and safest view of Monday's solar eclipse. Then Eater has published a new guide to New York City, and editor Stephanie Wu joins me to discuss, and we'll take your calls. And WNYC reporter Matt Katz has a new podcast launching today, and it's a very personal story. He joins me to talk about that podcast, Inconceivable Truth. That's the plan, so let's get this started with Girls State. Documentarians Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss captured the both uplifting and slightly frightening future of young politicians in the film Boys State. Jesse and Amanda followed campers in Texas at the annual American Legion program that tasks high school boys with building a government from the ground up. And now Jesse and Amanda are back with Girls State. This time they embedded with some ambitious young women attending the Missouri American Legion program for girls. And they arrived at a unique moment. You see, for the first time in the Missouri program's history, Girls State and Boys State were running at the same time on the same campus. And camp started just as the leaked Dobbs decision hit the media, and that sparked fears that Roe v. Wade was about to be overturned. The campers at Girls State grapple with all of this. They start to wonder why, for instance, Boys State seemed to have more resources and why the boys could walk around unchaperoned, but the girls had to stick to a buddy system. Plus, what were all these boys doing debating abortion rights when the people who would really be affected are just across campus? Girls State provides a look into how political ideology is shaped in young people, and maybe it even gives us a glimpse into our political future. The film premieres on Apple TV Plus tomorrow, and I'm thrilled to be joined now by the directors Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss. Hi, you two.
Hi.
Hey there.
Thanks for coming on the show. Amanda, let's start with you. Was the plan always to do both Boys State and Girls State?
Totally. We were actually thinking about Girls State when we were filming in Texas in 2018. We were talking to the Texas Girls State program at the time. It didn't pan out for that session, but we knew it was sort of unfinished business, particularly in watching how the boys began conversations about abortions. It got very awkward very quickly. That's one of those hot button topics in politics. So it comes up, but to their credit, the boys were a little uncomfortable getting into that debate with no girls around. And at that time, I remember thinking, wow, wouldn't it be amazing to be in a Girls State and all girls having this conversation? What would that look like? So we always knew we were going to do it. It was just a matter of when, where, how, but not why.
And that how, I think, is interesting, especially since you were thinking about it while you were observing these boys. I mean, Jesse, did you go into Girls State with a similar approach as Boys State, or were there different questions you wanted to investigate?
Girls State shares DNA with Boys State. It's a similar approach. It's this week-long experiment in democracy with 17-year-olds. But we wanted to release ourselves from the burden of trying to kind of repeat Boys State. That film was fantastic, but lightning doesn't strike twice, right? And yet we needed to try. We have two teenage daughters. I think we think a lot about how young women are coming of age politically in this very tempestuous time. And so we leapt into the maelstrom of Missouri, which is a really politically complicated state. You know, you got Josh Hawley over here and you got Cori Bush over there and everything in between. The Girls State program has a Supreme Court, and we thought they might consider an abortion case and argue it for themselves, which would be really interesting. And fortunately, we got an invitation by the program to come and immerse ourselves. So we just leapt in and said, if we fail, we fail, but we hope it works out.
It's interesting that you say lightning doesn't strike twice, but I'm sure that you want the lightning maybe to strike in another place. So what were you hoping to kind of explore or unearth in this next go around?
I think it's always organic. You go in with hopes, and then, of course, they shift when you're there and you witness what you witness. Our biggest fear and biggest hope really was to find kids who were as complicated, as confident, as fired up as the guys we met in Boise State. And I think once we did meet them in the 4 or 5 months before the session convened in Missouri, we spent a lot of time casting, is what we call it, even though it's obviously not actors. But we talked to hundreds of kids across Missouri and really got a feel for what's going on with them. But to find the right people, and once you find them, I mean, truly one of our characters, the minute Zoom opened, she said, "Hi, I'm running for president when I turned 37. That was amazing. No one had ever said that to us before, boy or girl. And to have a 17-year-old present that way was just, we knew immediately that she sort of cast herself on the spot. But these kids were also very special and surprised us, and we learned a lot from them. And that's really what you hope for in nonfiction, is to find people who you're going to go on a journey with at the right moment in their lives. And being 17, we know has the potential for people really change a lot. They sort of are shaping who they are. They're open to change. They're open to listening, but they're also vivid and passionate and all the things that are great in film characters.
When you say that you met somebody who immediately on Zoom said, "Hi, I'm running for president," I got to ask, are you referring to Emily?
Yes.
Okay. So Emily, great. I'm happy that you brought up the casting, because this is another question that we had. Emily Worthmore becomes really the main subject of your film. She was raised by a single mom. She's a conservative young woman, but is open to other people's ideas. And she really, really wants to be elected governor at this camp, president in real life. Let's hear a bit from her introduction in the film.
At my school, I'm kind of known as that kid. Culture Club, Key Club, Environmental Sustainability, FCA, Student Council, Connect, Melville Media, Step Team, Lacrosse. I'm missing things. Did I say Science Club? Oh, and I started a Bible study at my school. There we go.
So if you're a Federalist, Nationalist.
Yeah!
40! That's my lucky number.
Oh my gosh,
that's the year I'm running for president.
Emily Worthmore for America 2040.
I love it.
Oh my goodness.
Thank you so much.
They asked us our freshman year to pick your top three careers, and mine says President of the United States, broadcast journalist, rock star.
Jesse, how did you land on her as the main subject? Did you know it going in, or did that come out in the editing?
She announced herself strongly when we met her. I think what we never anticipated was the journey that she would go on. She is really the moral center of the film, and I think she's going to surprise a lot of viewers. Like, we don't share most of Emily's politics. You know, we're left of center. We're from San Francisco. We didn't grow up in the church, and we were not sure if we could really relate to this kid. But she's incredibly open-hearted. She's a fantastic listener. She's incredibly ambitious, and I think we sort of go along on that ride, and then things don't go according to plan, and she has to pivot. And so much of the joy of this film and this journey is watching these kids pivot, and it's about resilience too. And she really goes on an unexpected journey to investigate what the disparities are in the two programs, the Girls State program and the Boys State program, happening concurrently. And she's not the person we would have expected to confront those differences. And yet we see her sort of, I think, awakening to the structures of sexism and inequality that confront all women in our society. And so perhaps the least likely person to go on that journey goes on it. And I think that's one of the great surprises of the film.
And it sounds like Missouri provided this landscape where those tensions could come through. It's an interesting state. Like you had mentioned before, you have some very conservative rural areas, but also some really progressive pockets. How did you land on Missouri as the right Girls State camp to focus on?
We knew we didn't want to stay in Texas, so we opened ourselves up to talking to programs all across the country. And for a second, we even considered California. We did the big red state. What happens if we do the big blue state? But what we needed really in the end was a big program, because democracy gets messier the more people who are trying to organize and agree on something. So Missouri offered a giant program. Over 600 kids come. And Missouri is also fascinating politically. I think also it's not a battleground state, but it is. It's definitely a red state, but it's emblematic of a lot of states in the United States in that it has a rural urban dynamic, but also a lot of contradiction in the representation. So you have Josh Hawley, very conservative senator. Everybody knows him from his fist raise during the January 6th riot, and then the very progressive Congresswoman Cori Bush. So I think that, and everybody in between, I think for that reason, we thought, okay, the real state has interesting politics, and then the girl state program within that state is big and robust.
Abortion was really supercharged in the state too. And for the young women we were talking to, it's a trigger law state or was. So we knew that if the Dobbs decision, which leaked right before we shot the film, were to actually come down, it would basically outlaw abortion in the state. Girls were talking about that to us. They would have to leave the state if this was something they had to, if they wanted to get an abortion. So we knew that these strong forces that we feel in our political state are were concentrated in a kind of very intense way, and they carried those politics into the session. At first, the young women are stymied because the program doesn't really let them go and get into it, and we see them kind of fighting against the fluff, but they do get into it in really complicated, interesting ways. And like Emily, whose abortion politics are different than most of the girls she's around, because it's actually surprisingly a progressive space, has to negotiate that. That's hard. And that's hard for us in our adult state. And I think that's the kind of mirror of these programs, is they really do reflect what we're experiencing. And I think do offer a kind of weather vane for maybe a healthier politics too, actually.
It's interesting you bring up it being a bit of a mirror and maybe a weather vane at the same time. Think of that through the lens of the way that Roe v. Wade and Dobbs were on the minds of all of these young women while they were going through this process. Any other ways that you saw the way that they grappled with this in this kind of a small sandbox that was reflective of the larger world? Any ways that you saw there was tension or questions that they had that grappled that you think might reflect the way that we are operating as a country generally too?
I think fundamentally what we saw, what you see in the film, is that they want to do politics differently than we see it being enacted in the adult state. We see a lot of dysfunction, a lot of corrosive rhetoric, and paralysis. And they are hungry to connect with each other despite differences. I think they don't want to play up those differences. We saw that at Boy State. There was division sowed. But here it's about finding points of connection and common ground. And I don't say that in a kind of a sort of naive way. Like, they are very sophisticated, and yet they don't lean into those divisions. And I think part of it is wanting to connect out of COVID. Part of it is just a response to the dysfunction they see in adults who should be modeling better behavior. And it's kind of an irony that we have to look to teenage girls. Maybe it shouldn't be to model better behavior for us grownups about what is possible if you look beyond differences and actually listen to each other. They're pretty good at listening.
Yeah, it's funny. When we told people we were making this film, people would be like, oh, Mean Girls, you know? And it's funny because that's such a trope, really. And in fact, it seems to me that the adult state is Mean Girls. And then what we found at Girl State was more of a, I don't know, they really, yeah, listened. They really did want to connect on a very deep level, despite their differences. Mm.
We're talking to Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss. They are directors of Girls State, which premieres on Apple TV Plus tomorrow. We have a few more clips that we want to get to, some more questions about the two programs, comparing them to each other. But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Kushan Avidar in for Allison Stewart, and we're talking to Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss. They are directors of Girls State, which premieres on Apple TV Plus tomorrow. Amanda, before the break, we were talking a little bit about how these kids are finding their political voices a little bit as part of the evolution that you saw them go through. And I feel like kids at this age are just beginning to sort of understand what their political beliefs are for themselves. One of your subjects talks about how she used to be more alt-right because of her family, but now she's liberal. What sense did you get of how much these kids were influenced by their parents and the people around them when it came to their political beliefs?
Yeah, I love that question, because that was a question I had going in to talk, even in the casting period where I was talking to hundreds of people to try and find the folks we were going to follow, just trying to get a sense of where they got their politics. Like, why, where do we get our politics? We don't, sometimes we inherit it. We inherit certain things from our parents, but a lot of these kids actually had different politics from their parents. Some people, you could really hear the sort of phrases that you imagine they were getting from whatever media outlet that they were listening to, right? And sometimes you just got a sense, and we were certainly looking for the kids who we really felt like were speaking for themselves and not parroting either their parents or media. One thing I shifted my thinking on a little bit, actually, now that you mention it, is social media. We have two teenage daughters. I'm constantly talking about how bad social media is. But Faith's story really is a reminder that there is some ways that these kids, the exposure they get in whatever, TikTok, Instagram stories, to people who are different from them is actually a good thing, I think, in terms of, I mean, if you don't get to meet those people in real life, who do you get to meet online that actually opens your life experience to something new in a good way? I think that was a lesson for me.
The exposure that you're talking about, it seems to be a theme so much. And, you know, going back to Emily again, who we talked about before the break, who's one of the students that you focused on, at times it felt like she and some of the other campers were frustrated that real conversations about political issues weren't being had. And a lot of that felt like they had this fluency, maybe as a part of being exposed to social media, as you're talking about. It seemed like some of that was out of fear of conservative and liberal campers fighting with one another at the same time. There's a clip that I think demonstrates this. Let's hear Emily talking about how she feels as a conservative at the camp.
Being conservative and being a young girl isn't a combination that you see a lot around here, I feel like. I love liberals. I love them to death. But it's a continuous effort to listen to people who disagree with me. I've yet to ever just flip a table and say, I'm done with this conversation. Maybe there'll be a day when I do that.
Jesse, do you think your presence at the camp maybe affected how the girls acted or the views they expressed while they were there? Do you think maybe they were nervous about how they might be portrayed, or did they forget about the cameras as soon as, you know, they started talking?
I don't think anybody ever forgets about the camera, but we work hard to be unobtrusive. And I think what these girls have is a kind of inner confidence that allows them to be themselves and chart their own paths without thinking too much about us. They'd probably say the same thing in their own words. So I don't get hung up on that question in a way. I don't think it's objective science documentary. It's pretty subjective, and you build relationships with these people, and you have a relationship. The camera has a relationship with them. They're used to being looked at as young women. They look at themselves through their cameras too. We built an largely female crew, actually, I think as a way to kind of be sensitive to the gaze that we have on them. And also the trust of our subjects is really important to us. So sharing the rough cut of the film was something we did, talking to their parents because they were minors. It's a long-term relationship, not a kind of quick turnaround where you dive in and dive out. And so I think it accounts for the intimacy that you feel. It's not invisible intimacy, but it's earned intimacy. So I think audiences also feel that. You know, they can sense if you're not really honoring a relationship. And I think we're pretty proud of the portrait that we're able to draw about these experiences. And they're also really vulnerable too. They're unusual in their confidence, but their willingness to be vulnerable and talk about their fears, their anxieties, about their self-criticism, which is a big part of being a teenage girl, is kind of being too hard on yourself. So I think the film, in addition to all the politics we've talked about, is a lot about just being a teenage girl. And I think the movie is, we're talking about serious stuff too, but I think the movie made us laugh. It really made us cry, the journey we went on. And I think audiences will get that too, amidst all the serious political discussion.
Yeah, there is definitely a sense of earned intimacy, to borrow the phrase that you were using. There's moments, I think, especially between Nisha and Brooke, if I'm remembering those two correctly. They're both running. So for listeners, they're both running for a Supreme Court seat in this mock Supreme Court. And you show their relationship, two very different individuals coming to focus. Did you find that most of these kids were really eager to participate in being a part of this documentary, or was it a whole spectrum? Amanda, how about we send that to you?
It was a spectrum for sure. I mean, and going back to the casting conversations, what I found really interesting is that so many kids did not identify as a Republican or a Democrat, but also weren't really sure. I mean, this is Gen Z. They're very aware of, they're filming each other and themselves all the time. But I think some were like very unclear about whether they would make a good documentary film subject. They'd sort of talk about that with me, which I, you know, you can never know what that means. I think actually, by the way, when we asked Nisha, for example, like, how did it feel to be on camera? She's like, you know, I really think the only thing I would have done differently is like brush my hair more, you know, like I think there's a, I really think these kids just were going to behave how they were going to behave. And thank goodness we were there.
What's interesting about Nisha is she's, you see in the film, she studies the movie Legally Blonde as a way to prepare for the social challenge of being at Girl State. She's very equipped kind of intellectually to deal with the issues. Yeah. It's the social dynamics which are daunting to her. So that was sort of funny to see. She's very self-deprecating about that.
Another element that it seemed like many of these young women were confronted with was an idea of feminism that was being touted at this camp. Amanda, can you talk a little bit about how the girls felt that version of feminism was, how they grappled with it? It was, for me, I think, a very fundamental part of the movie.
Right. The F word. You said it, I didn't. It's funny. I think Toshi at the beginning of the film says, you know, who's very ambitious, very smart person came into the camp really quickly, like, is this going to be kumbaya or, you know, all these girls, you know, sitting around a campfire holding hands or what? And I think initially there was a real feeling of there's a shared common cause here, which is there's a lack of representation in the halls of political power. Women still are only at 28% of, you know, Congress. There's never been a female president. So they all know that going in. And so there's a certain buy-in, obviously, to the purpose of going to Girl State. But as another character says, at some point, the program started to feel very fluffy and these girls' empowerment speeches started to take the place of actually talking about politics and change and doing the action of feminism, right? And what I love about the film is that we watch the trajectory of Emily in particular, who at the beginning of the film doesn't think that there are many disparities between the opportunities given to men and women. She, in fact, thinks that talking about it is holding us back. And then by the end of the film, she's the person who is investigating the disparity in funding between these two programs. And she's a kick butt journalist. She's going to really do that in her life. And I think to watch that awakening, which I would call a feminist awakening, is one of the more one of the biggest privileges of my life, frankly, and again, why I do what I do. I wouldn't have expected that going in from Emily.
Why? What about it felt like such a privilege? I mean, you say awakening. Put a finger on that. What about it felt like such a privilege?
Well, I think it's rare to watch somebody really change in front of you, and particularly when you're not making longitudinal documentary and following somebody for years and years, which we've done before, which is great but also hard. These programs are so intense, they sort of forge transformation. It's a crucible, not for everybody, but for Emily. And it only comes because in the midpoint of the film, she's kind of knocked down and she has to sort of let go of certain dreams and illusions that she's brought into this experience, not just a sort of construction of society, which, you know, she's holding at the beginning of the film versus how she comes to see it at the end. It's really her own strengths and limitations that she confronts. So I think it's the combination of the two that accounts for her change in the film. And I think why it feels privileged to be witness to that. The space itself has a kind of preciousness. And I mean that in the best way, in that there are so few places in American life where people of different politics are actually trying to talk to each other in real life. And there are problems with the program, we know that, but I think that there are virtues as well. And I think Emily kind of embodies the possibilities of the program in the best way to help people on their journey in life. Mm. I would just say too, we're so happy the film is going to be on Apple and available globally, but also the film will be at the Alamo Drafthouse in New York City this weekend on the big screen for people who want to experience it that way, which of course we like too.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss. They're directors of Girl State, which premieres on Apple TV Plus tomorrow and is going to be at Alamo Drafthouse in New York City this weekend, you said, right?
Yeah, we'll be there loitering around the theater.
Come say hi.
We'll be there for a conversation. Yeah,
that's wonderful. I wanted to dive into race too, which, you know, we talked about gender. Amanda, you had mentioned Toshi, I think, right? So this is another student, and it seems like the camp was definitely majority white. You followed Toshi, who says to you, "Yeah, I know I might be the first Black person some of these girls have ever met in their lives." Let's listen to a moment from the film.
From the jump, just walking in, I already knew, like, it's going to be a lot of white people.
Hey, y'all.
These girls are literally from places where there's, like, 300 people in their town. So I'm probably the first Black person they've ever interacted with.
I just think that communication is important because we're never going to get the opportunity to talk to people from different parts of Missouri the way that we are right now.
As far as, like, the white girls go, they've all been, like, super cool. Like, they haven't, like, I honestly have not experienced any microaggressions. I probably have.
I've been wanting to ask you, someone told me you speak Nigerian.
I speak Igbo. Nigerian is a country.
Isn't there a language Nigerian?
Yeah, it's Igbo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is it That's weird really if cool. I ask you to say something?
Yeah. It is.
Okay, then pretend I didn't ask.
Oh my God, y'all are too funny. I try to find common ground and I try to like relate to them because at the end of the day, we're all high school teenage girls who like care about government. And we can connect through that.
How, Amanda, how did race play into the experience of Girl State for campers of color?
I mean, how can it not? So this is, it's sort of, to me, this is another moment of microcosm for the bigger reality of our country. This was true in Boy State as well. It's a major part of the dynamic for the kids who, the minority of kids who show up to the program and know that's part of their journey going in through the program. And Toshi is sort of one of those special people who's able to articulate that in a way throughout her experience while she's also ascending very quickly to the top of she ends up, well, spoiler alert, she becomes the attorney general and is an essential part of the Supreme Court case that we watch and really is extraordinary. But, you know, that is her journey. And she, I'm so glad that we have this large cast this time of seven kids, because I think they all bring a different perspective to the life experience of being a teenage girl, but also what it's like to navigate politics in America.
Well, and she's the child of Nigerian immigrants. She's from a big city, Kansas City. And I think the program is overrepresented by suburban and maybe more rural kids who are white. And she doesn't expect to be able to negotiate the space successfully. And she does experience that microaggression that you hear there. But she's sort of clear-eyed, but also determined to kind of push forward and finds more support than she expects. So I think there is something unexpected about her journey, as there is with Emily's, in that the space is more welcoming, more supportive, and allows her to gain more political power than she believes maybe the adult state would, but certainly what she expected to find at Girl State. So, and then she's actually put in a really interesting position arguing in the abortion case, the Supreme Court hears at Girl State, a position that doesn't reflect her own personal views. And that's a kind of moral test for her. Can she make a convincing case for something she doesn't personally believe in? Or does that make her a better advocate or lawyer? And so she's put in all sorts of difficult positions through this experience. But I think that's what's kind of great about watching her go through this.
And an interesting point that you just brought up is how Toshi wouldn't maybe have expected to ascend as far in real life, or I guess in the outside world, as in the world that we see here for Girl State. And Amanda, it makes me wonder, we're in a political moment when a lot of young people have expressed feeling cynical about politics, even hopeless at sometimes. Was there something you observed during your time filming that made you hopeful?
I'd say the reality of the adult state is that it's both. I feel hope and I also feel despair in our political system, in our country. I do feel refreshed every time I hang out with young people, understanding that the folks that we're following are kind of a self-selected group who want to go to government camp during the summer. So it's possible they are the most engaged, the most activated, you know, the most eyes open about what there is to be cynical about our system, but also what they feel they have the energy and interest to change, right? They see a Congress that's frozen with dysfunction because of hyperpolarization, and yet at the same time know that we have these major existential crises like climate, like racism, like sexism. Like, there's a lot of stuff that needs help from the government, and they know they need to be that new push to make that change.
And we can see a lot of that play out in the movie. Girl State premieres on Apple TV Plus tomorrow, and it's at Alamo Drafthouse in New York City this weekend. I've been talking to Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss, the directors. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Kasia.
Thanks, Kasia.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.